time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Good morning, good morning. John will join me here in about 10 minutes. He's out of town. I'm Michael Kelly. I got in today. I was going to have a co-host with me, but they are held up with the snow out there that is absolutely stunningly gorgeous. It is beautiful out there, and hopefully you're not having to go to work. I'm pretty sure your kids are not at school. Boy, this time sure does feel like COVID, doesn't it? All the time we've spent inside for the last week, I felt myself getting that same itch of, man, I want to see people. I want to get out. So I spent a little time out walking in the snow, which is dangerous. Went to REI, bought a pair of boots, snow boots, because I haven't had snow boots. Heck, we haven't had snow in 5 or 6 years like this. For my own mental sanity, I needed to get out and do some exercise. So I go and buy a pair of size 13 snow boots and start hoofing it through Forest Park. And what's amazing is while the roads are congested and people are being told to stay off them, Forest Park, man, it is full. Art Hill has got everybody out there riding their sleighs down, and it's quite beautiful if you have a chance to get out there and do it. But let's be honest, I'm frustrated with the way that this snow removal has gone over the last week or so. Here we are now experiencing another snowstorm, and we hadn't even recovered from the last one. I realize that we haven't had snow of this size and consequence in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, but isn't it amazing that it seems like we've forgotten how to deal with the snow? Politicians in particular, these types of natural events provide politicians with an opportunity to shine or to flounder. And I think we have to say across the board from the state to local level, this seems to have been somewhat of a failure. And I'm not talking about the men and women who are in their snowplows right now working their tails off. Obviously, we have a shortage of snowplow drivers and other folks to work inside of government. And so what do you do if you're a politician? You don't have the adequate resources to meet the needs of the citizens. There is an expectation you could do this. Yeah, it was a significant storm, but we've experienced them in the past, and we've been able to move this type of snow out of the way, get the roads back to normal. I know some of you who are on Highway 40, even as yesterday, where there was still snowpack on the most busy highway in the St. Louis area. Well, I think what politicians can do is be leaders, be out front, be in a storm center where they're giving constant updates on here's what's anticipated, here's what we're asking. We're going to be clearing life and safety roads first. We're going to be making sure there's access to the hospitals, etc. And I think that presence of being ever present in the news with constant updates on what you're doing not only could bring relief to those of us out here who are wanting to understand why things aren't getting done, but it might help also light a fire to make sure stuff is getting done. You know, when the boss is there and when there's oversight and supervision, people will perform even better. And I just think this has been a failure across the board for nearly 5 days of waiting for the snow removal to happen. And so maybe we ought to internally look at who to hold accountable. From my perspective, this isn't a Tashara Jones problem or a Sam Page problem or a Mike Parson problem alone. It's all of their problem. Everybody's pointing at, oh, this is a state road. This is a federal road. Oh, this is a city road. I don't care. When you're trying to get out of your neighborhood, you want to know that you can eventually be able to do it. And this week we've had a hopeless situation. And I think the leadership has failed in keeping us informed and helping us understand where we're going to get. Hopefully on Monday morning when we all have to go back to school, they're going to have these roads cleared. Goodness, do we need to get back to school. It's bringing back too many memories of COVID. You are listening to the Hancock and Kelly Show. I'm Michael Kelly, and joining me right now, well, he's John Hancock. How are you, buddy? Must be in that miserable city of Jefferson. Is that right?
I am, kid. You want me to call back?
No, you're fine right now. So you're down in Jefferson City, okay. John. Tell me what you're up to. I know, but boy, you've got a kicking off a series of events as we turn over the governorship to Mike Kehoe this next week.
Yeah, I'm very gratified. Governor-elect Kehoe asked our firm to produce, manage the inaugural festivities, and I've been working at that pretty much nonstop since the very end of November. And all of it culminates starting on Sunday with a church mass at 2 p.m. And over the course of those next 2 days, we're going to have 13 separate events, including the swearing-in ceremony on what is likely to be muddy ground outside on the south side of the Capitol. But it's such a cool event. I got to do this one other time 20 years ago when I was a much younger man. And to have the timing hit the way it does is it's just a cool thing to experience. Yeah. So
yeah, I mean you're talking about 13 events and what 36, 48 hours, including a lot of stuff that has to be coordinated. What with the military, the state highway patrol, and every elected politician with an ego on the planet, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so we've got the swearing-in starts at 11:30 on Monday. And so we do that. We swear in. We'll swear in the Attorney General, the Treasurer, the Secretary of State, the Lieutenant Governor. And then at about 2 minutes till 12, if all goes according to plan, Governor Kehoe will take the oath of office. It will be administered by, so the oath has to be administered by a judge or by a notary public. And so Governor Kehoe's oath is going to be administered by notary public, former Senator Roy Blunt.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, and so he'll say they're very close friends. He'll take the oath of office, and right at noon, the church bells of St. Peter's across the street will ring. Four T-38s will fly over, and a 19-gun salute will commence right at high noon. So that's going to be the highlight of all the public events that we're doing.
What were those things that are going to fly over?
T-38s, buddy.
Yeah, and what do they do? I mean, what are they? Just like planes?
Well, they're airplanes, Michael, uh-huh. And they're military aircraft and be flying low.
Yeah,
our B-2s are otherwise engaged in American military activities. They're not available for us, so we get the T-38s, but there'll be four of them. So looking forward to that.
Now, I have been to a couple of inaugurations. It's been a while since we've had a Democrat. But my favorite thing in the past has shown up in Jefferson City as well, and that's the majestic Budweiser Clydesdales. Are they going to make a trip down to Jeff City to toast the new governor?
Meeting with them this morning, not the Clydesdales, but their handlers. And, yeah, they're going to be here. They will be posted at the state capitol, and then they're going to make a little march from the Capitol to the governor's mansion at 2 o'clock on Monday. There's a public receiving line into the governor's mansion. Anybody in the public can get in line and go shake hands with Governor Kehoe and First Lady Claudia Kehoe. So that's going to be another cool event.
So John, in all seriousness, this inauguration, it's all Republicans who are getting sworn in. Pardon me?
How about that?
Yeah, not my party will be sitting on the sidelines watching. But things do feel different. Even though there's not a partisan change that's coming, there seems to be a feeling in the air that Mike Parson's going to have to deal with some things that, you know, Republicans haven't dealt with in the past. Is that error of unique feeling, a significant change, major problems, is that permeating Jeff City? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of challenges always, obviously, in state government. But Mike Kehoe is really a unique figure in Missouri history. You're talking about a guy who grew up in a single-parent home. His father left the family when Mike was one. Grew up in North St. Louis in Baden, and then they moved to Walnut Park, which in those days was still a rough part of town up in North St. Louis. And, you know, in that very humble and very modest upbringing, Dave Sinclair stepped in to kind of help the family out. And that turned out to be a pivotal moment in Mike Keogh's life. He ended up going to Chaminade and graduating and started working at Dave Sinclair Ford when he was a teenager. Went on to become the truck salesman, went on to become the manager of the truck department. He was so young when Dave Sinclair named him manager, they had to get a special dispensation from Ford to allow that young a person to be a manager at the dealership. And as time went on, and they moved him to Central Missouri, where they had a van conversion business, the Ford dealers owned, that was losing money. Mike turned it into an ambulance manufacturer, bought it, and today it's the third largest ambulance manufacturer in all of North America. And then at 27, he became the youngest Ford dealer in the country with Mike Kehoe Ford in Jefferson City. About that time, he bought a farm because Mr. Sinclair had a farm and used to take Mike out there on weekends when he was a little guy. Mike got into the farming business, and 30-some years later, he's got a very successful cow-calf operation in Phelps and Pulaski counties. So you've got a guy with such a unique background, having been raised in a crime-infested neighborhood with nothing, who became a successful business person, became a successful farmer. That particular set of skills and experiences is altogether unique in the history of the state, I think. And I think that background is going to serve him really well as our 58th governor.
Yeah, well, he doesn't seem to do anything halfway. And goodness knows he's going to have a full dance card of things that he's going to have to address. Hey, speaking of human beings who faced monumental tasks, yesterday we laid to rest Jimmy Carter. And by the way, the eulogies were great. I enjoyed them, but I'm not going to get past this without talking about the political theater we witnessed yesterday, John. All the living presidents sitting there together. Donald Trump, who had personally offended every one of them. And you could kind of see that yesterday. I don't know if you saw Barack Obama. I know you're not a big fan, but he showed grace and class and sitting next to the man, but there was a moment where George W. Bush walked in, and it was clear that he and Mrs. Bush did not want to speak to Donald Trump, and Barack Obama kind of played a block and pivot role for him. It was interesting political theater. Did you watch with a little popcorn as I did?
Yeah, I caught a little bit of it. You know, really interesting juxtaposition between George Bush and Donald Trump, because they really represent the Republican Party of old. The party of Reagan, really, in a very real sense, George W. Bush probably being the last Reagan archetype Republican to occupy the White House. And then Donald Trump, who clearly has changed the Republican Party. It's much more of a populist movement now. And you couldn't have a more stark contrast between the two most recent Republican presidents. And the bridge between them was Barack Obama for 8 years. So that was kind of a poignant moment, and I think it really did underscore just how much our politics have changed in the last decade or two. And it's always historic when the former presidents are all in the same place. You don't see it very often. And Jimmy Carter, a fitting tribute to him, his life, his legacy. I thought it was, America does these things pretty well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Hey, buddy, yeah, I know you got family out on the left coast. Any of them caught up in these firestorms that literally are taking place as we speak?
So my son-in-law's sister, her boss lost his home. Their condo so far has been spared. And then Jan's cousin, who lives in Newport Beach, they've been spared so far. But just the devastation and seeing these entire communities and developments wiped out, it's horrifying.
Well, and if you've been there, I mean, these are probably some of the wealthiest neighborhoods literally on the planet. I guess we all have empathy for that. At the same time, it's going to be significant costs. I hear people saying that this could be as much a cost to the federal government as Katrina was, which immediately makes me remember, your party suddenly gets interested in fiscal responsibility, particularly when it happens in a blue state. You remember the hurricane that hit New Jersey and Ted Cruz said, we can't afford to do this. President Trump was right there in the Carolinas saying, we're going to do everything to rebuild it. You anticipate we're going to see some D.C. political football with people's lives in California simply because they're from a blue state?
Well, I don't know. And it's unusual, if not unprecedented, to have this kind of a disaster right in between the outgoing and incoming presidential administration. So it looks like Joe Biden has turned the taps on, saying whatever you need. Donald Trump will be president in a week and a few days from now. And I can't predict how he's going to respond to this. I hope that it's a smooth, seamless transition because there's a lot of people hurting in California. These natural disasters are times where the country historically has come together, and I hope that's the case here.
Well, my prediction is in the coming weeks, you and I will be talking about the political fight over disaster relief funding. Buddy, Godspeed to you and what you're doing down in Jefferson City. What a cool experience to be a part of planning and implementing and making this transition of power happen. I sure going to miss you. I got John Jr. going to join me later in the show as our NFL insider. We're going to talk about the Lord's team winning in that game last night. Did you stay up and watch Notre Dame kick that field goal?
I did. That was a heck of a game. Hey, real quick, I'm in Jeff City at JP's house. It's just like being home. He was outside shoveling the snow this morning.
Well, tell Mrs. Hancock in the role of JP, we said hello. Yeah. Hey, that's my best friend, John Hancock. He's down there going to inaugurate a new government. Here comes the news right here on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
It's a winter wonderland, and Hancock is not around. He's down in Jefferson City, so I'm by myself. I'm looking out of the windows here at, what is it, Studio B, Frank? Is that what we call it? It is absolutely gorgeous in downtown St. Louis. I can only imagine what it might be out the window of your car or out of your own home. If you're at home, you're lucky. Throw another log on that fire. Brew another pot of coffee. You got Amy Chris coming in here in a little bit. I'll spend some time with them as well. And it's a good day to listen to KMOX and, I don't know, prepare for college football tonight. Another great college football game tonight. Texas and Ohio State going at it in the championship game. Of course, last night, my favorite team, the Lord's team, Notre Dame, defeated Penn State at the last minute. Picked off the a pass from the Penn State quarterback, goes down, kicks a field goal, wins it, and us Irish fans who, I know, you people who don't like the Irish, you view us kind of like the Dallas Cowboys. You either love them or hate them. It's interesting to be an Irish fan and have to take everybody's ridicule, but it has been a long time since the Irish have been this good and have a chance to become the national champs. So for those of us who are Notre Dame fans, we're excited. I was a fan of Sesame Street growing up and learned something in the news today driving to KMOX. Sesame Street is getting ready to start its, 55th season? They announced who is going to be joining them, and including Michael B. Jordan, not the basketball player, but the movie star. You've got SZA, S-C-Z-A, Billie Jean King, Chris Stapleton, all these folks are announced that they'll be a part of the new season of Sesame Street. I didn't realize that Sesame Street is no longer on PBS. It is on PBS? Well, they're saying that these new episodes are going to be released on Max, which is HBO. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Because the first cartoon cartoonish characters I remember was Fraggle Rock. Do you remember Fraggle Rock when HBO first came out?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what is this, the new Fraggle Rock? The Sesame Street is on HBO?
No, it's still Sesame Street.
Yeah.
It just shows up on HBO first.
Okay, so.
And then it's on Sesame Street.
So do you, because you have two cute little ones, right? Two,
yes,
right?
Yes, two.
Do you have HBO Max so that they can watch Sesame Street?
We do, but we watch Sesame Street and all the other PBS shows on the PBS Kids app because it's easier to get to.
Yeah. Is it, though? Is it easier to get to?
My five-year-old gets to it pretty
really?
Easily, yes.
Yeah, have you ever seen this? Sometimes they give like monkeys or apes, iPads at the zoo, and you can see how quickly they can get into.
They have learned to scroll faster than I have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, this phone here, apparently it has AI technology. I don't even know. I've never used AI. I don't really understand how I would use it and what I would use it to do. It's on this phone. I don't know how to do it.
I think you're utilizing it more than you think. Anytime any of these programs finishes a question for you, when you're looking for something, finishes a word, that's AI.
Yeah. Well, good for the kids that they can figure out where to go watch Sesame Street, because I only know where it would be on Channel 9. And that was great. And loved Sesame Street, but I was a little bit of a hyperactive kid when I was little.
And it probably calmed you down because the episodes were a lot slower than they are now. They're a lot more fast-paced now to change.
Are they?
Yeah, they are
a lot more fast-paced. Hyperactive kid, I remember my mom used to throw me in front of watching Mr. Rogers. And he was the slowest talking, happiest man on the planet. And I'm sure it lulled me into some type of ease, but boy, it was painful to have to go watch him because I'm like, come on, Fred, let's get to it. Let's go to the trolley and go see the magic man. But instead, you got to watch him take off his shoes, etc. But I'm thrilled now that I know that PBS has got, or HBO now has PBS, that I can go. I like Chris Stapleton. I think he'd be great to see on Sesame Street.
They do a great job of utilizing celebrities to tell stories on Sesame Street, and they always have. Remember, Bill Cosby was on that show.
Really?
Wasn't he? Years and years ago?
Oh, I'm sure everybody's been on it.
I don't know.
Katy
Perry's been on it with Elmo.
Yeah, going and being on Sesame Street's like a rite of passage for celebrities. And it's just out of fish out of water that it's on HBO. But speaking of fish out of water, I don't know if you've been paying attention. The Washington Post, it was purchased by Jeff Bezos. And after the last election, leading up to the election, Jeff Bezos, the ownership of the Washington Post, one of the more credible newspapers in Washington, D.C., said, look, we're no longer going to make stands as it relates to our opinion pieces. We're going to let the news stand for itself, etc. As a result, we're seeing a departure of some of the biggest and most prized reporters. Ashley Parker, Michael Schur, Josh Dossley, Tyler Pager are all leaving the Washington Post saying, hey, look, we're no longer an independent journalistic group where we're allowed to have our own thoughts and put together opinions on the opinion page. They're moving on to the Atlantic and Wall Street Journal. But at the same time that there seems to be an abandonment of the Washington Post because of the policies of Jeff Bezos, there is this move now that Amazon may be getting into the news business, which, of course, is also owned by Jeff Bezos. I didn't realize this, but on election night, Brian Williams, you remember the former NBC anchor, NBC late night host, who recently departed the NBC networks, he hosted an election show on Amazon on election night. Did not realize that. Had big stars that participated in it from Shepard Smith, Poppy Harlow, James Carvel, Candy Crawley, Don Lemon, Abby Huntsman. I mean, Douglas Brinkley. He was running a typical news show. Over 4 million people tuned into that broadcast. And now, as a result, Amazon is exploring whether or not they're going to get into the news business and produce their own news segments. And isn't it interesting? I mean, it's just kind of this direct contrast to what we're hearing. You know, we have some of the old traditional reporters at the Washington Post who are, Fred Flintstoning it out of the Washington Post. At the same time, Amazon is trying to get into the news business, was able to secure 4 million people. And again, we will be in this predicament, and I guess this is where we're all headed, where there's no longer this broadcast news. I'm personally a Lester Holt fan and tune into NBC Nightly News, been doing it since it was Tom Brokaw, and then later Brian Williams and now Lester Holt. And I guess someday I'll be going to chase the NBC News app on an app rather than watching it on a broadcast, but it sure seems to be the way that it's headed over at Amazon. And one other thing that I think is compelling enough to bring up here in what would typically be a political conversation time for Hancock and I is Elon Musk. This is interesting to me. Elon Musk's own biographer has recently come out and said that he believes that Elon Musk is deeply unwell and is going mad. I don't know about you. I'm a Twitter person. I've blocked Elon Musk on Twitter. That doesn't mean anything. He still comes through constantly on my Twitter feed and all my social media feeds. He leads the news on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, on nearly any paper you pick up. Has there ever been a more influential or a person, certainly in modern times, in politics, not only in the United States, but in the world, is Elon Musk? I'm not sure. I think you're hard-pressed to think of somebody who might be. I mean, this is a man who's been weighing in the Italian election. He surely weighed in the American election. He's made his opinions known about Justin Trudeau and Canada and has had lots to say there. At the same time, he has this outsized impact on everything that you and I are consuming and the politics and the world that we're living. His own biographer is saying, I think this man's going mad and he's deeply unwell. I don't know. Seems like something we all ought to continue to watch. Is it surprising? It's not to me. I don't know. Elon Musk, to me, has now become like a Bond villain. I think he's a genius. He's done remarkable things. He's brought us EV cars. He's helping us go to space. Apparently, all of our communications technology now and in the atmosphere and the satellites are controlled and owned by him. There's no doubt about it. He's a genius. I take some heed in when his own biographer says that he's not well. Speaking of not well, the roads have not been well over the last several days here in St. Louis. We're going to talk to the premier road authority for my entire life when we come back. It's none other than the captain, Roger Brand, right here on KMOX. The beautiful snow continues to come down in downtown St. Louis and across the St. Louis area. The roads have got some snow cover on them. Well, heck, that's been going on for over a week. This is Michael Kelly for the Hancock and Kelly Show. John Hancock will be back with me next week. But every day on my way to school, when my parents drove me when I was a kid, there were two voices that are ever cemented into my head as it relates to traffic. And that would be first Officer Don Miller, who we heard forever here in the helicopters of KMOX, and Captain Roger Brand. And that second celebrity is kind enough to join me right now. Roger, how long you been on KMOX?
Well, behind the scenes, I started in like November of 88, I guess. And then I'd done a Top 40 on KHGR, our FM station, back when we had used to be KMOX FM, then it was KHGR. And I did that from early 86 until almost the end of 88. And then I moved downstairs behind the scenes at KMOX and, got the opportunity to start filling in for Don Miller, thanks to Mr. Hyland. And I did that for a few years until Don retired. And then I was fortunate enough to apply for the job and get it. So I started doing traffic full time in the helicopter in January of 93.
And your business, like everything, has been changed by technology. I mean, back in the day, getting up in the helicopter, the plane was the only way to really know what was going on with the roads. Now we have cameras on almost every intersection. You've got the recorders and the CBs and other things that are on in the background that you constantly know what's going on. Is covering the roads a lot easier when you're not having to be up in the helicopter?
I think in general it is. It's easier to get a quick overview of everything that's going on in the metro area. Because, you know, back in the day, I mean, that's one of the things I used to do behind the scenes before I started doing traffic full time. I used to have to, you know, Don Miller would take a section of the city, like whatever he'd just seen. So he'd tell me, well, I'm going to talk about North County. And I'd be like, okay. So then I got to cover the rest of it. So that meant what I had to do was actually physically write out a traffic report for either Bob Hardy, Wendy Weiss, or Bill Wilkerson to read live on air. So I had to like call places. I'd call like when banks were open, if there was a bank like a Lindell Bank that was at 64 and Clayton there in the city, I'd call them and say, hey, what's traffic look like going by there? Or I'd call a gas station alongside the highway and say, hey, what's it doing up there? And that's how I would get traffic. Or sometimes, you know, people would call me at a toll-free traffic line. So yeah, it was a lot different back then.
Incredible. So since 1988, you've been doing this. You've been through quite a few snowstorms. Of course, the legendary one being in 1982, you didn't cover that one. But as you've watched this particular snowstorm, and it was significant, right? We had almost a dozen inches of snow or precipitation, including ice and sleet. Have you seen a change in the way that we do deal with roads, Roger? Has there been a deterioration? Or is this kind of on par for these types of snows that we experienced in the past?
It's sort of hard to say. I mean, the one thing I will say is that there's not been too many times when we've had like, you know, I can remember, like you said, that big snowstorm. I got out of going back to school for a couple of days because they had Interstate 70 closed, so I couldn't get back to Kansas City back in 82. But, you know, most of the storms are all snow, or we've had a few unfortunate ones. I remember losing power for a number of days. We had an ice storm, and it was pretty much all ice. But to have a changeable precipitation event that had that much accumulation, those are pretty rare, I think. So that's one thing I will say. And the fact that the ice came down first and then the snow on top of it, I mean, you know, a plow works sort of like your snow shovel, as far as I know. I mean, obviously they're heavier, but, you know, you can't really shovel the ice. It's just there. I mean, you can get out a steel shovel and whack at it and chip away at it, you know, to get it off, but it's a lot harder to remove than snow. So that's one thing that didn't work in MoDOT's favor. Now, you know, how well were the roads treated in preparation? I don't really know. I can tell you that the house where I grew up in my mom's neighborhood out in West County, they actually put salt brine down at like noon on Thursday. You know, the snowstorm didn't start till Saturday night. So like 2 days in advance, they were already treating the roads in my mom's subdivision. You know, that wasn't right. Even a main street. So, but that was, you know, the local municipality, the city that was doing that. So that was their call and what they wanted to do. So obviously MoDOT, you know, they deal with the interstates and the main thoroughfares. So not sure if they were on top of that as early as maybe some of the little municipalities where I live up on the top of a bluff. So I have a big hill to get up, and my city does a great job.
Yeah.
Again, they salted the road and they plowed it. Now, there's still ice out there, but they at least had one good lane plowed pretty much clear down to the pavement so I could get up this hill.
Sure.
You know, otherwise, it'd be tough. But, you know, the thing that amazed me, now, some things I don't really know about, I can see the result of. I'll tell you the one thing I noticed was a lot, you know, we've had a lot of really bad traffic for several days. I mean, I'm talking like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and of course Monday, but most of the week on some of these secondaries like Olive Street. Now, I don't know exactly what the problem was, but we were backed up sometimes during the afternoon rush hours on Olive from 141 all the way into like North and South in New City past the Costco. It was like stop and go the whole way, both directions. I mean, that's what, 10 or 12 miles of Olive Street.
Yeah.
You know, we had the same problems on Lindbergh between 64, really between Manchester and Page. Lindbergh was really tough. Now, you know, I'm assuming it's due to road conditions. You know, sometimes I don't know exactly what it is. Now, the one that I did experience myself, we were having backed up traffic several days on 141. In fact, some mornings it was backing up from Carmen all the way up through Highlands Boulevard. And I thought, well, maybe it's the signals at Highlands. I tried to look at that camera because they do have one there, and I couldn't tell if that was the problem. But when I went to Costco yesterday, I'm driving up in the right lane northbound on 141 to Costco, and just before I get to turn into Costco, that right lane disappears.
Right.
And it's gone through that intersection. So what was creating that jam was the fact that they didn't plow that lane, just that, I don't know, 30 yards of it, didn't plow it clear enough to keep that right lane open all the way through the intersection. So people were having to jump out of the right lane and they couldn't merge on. If they're leaving Costco to go north on 141, they had to wait. So it was creating a traffic jam just because that one lane wasn't completely plowed clear. Now, why, you know, after 4 days, they didn't go out there in the middle of the night and knock that out, I have no idea. But I think it's things like that that led to some really big backups. And Amy Markscores sent out a tweet the other day. I think it was Wednesday afternoon on her drive home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you could still see ice and snow packed lanes on 64 at Ballast. That was 3 days
that was
after,
shocking. Yeah.
You know, now whether, you know, like I said, once it's packed down and it's ice, it's probably almost impossible to clear unless you're out there with you know, a blowtorch or something. I don't know how you can do it other than, you know, manual labor. I mean, that's what I have to do in my driveway. But right. So, you know, do they not prepare in advance the proper way? I mean, they always talk about the salt brine or the beet juice. I didn't hear, you know, how much of that they put down in advance. But the fact that the ice came down first and then snow on top of it, and it solidified underneath, and that made it that much harder to clear. So I'm just not sure, like, how the preparation went in advance of the storm. But once it was here, like I said, some of it's pretty tough to clear, and that's why, like I said yesterday, I was still having a problem.
Well, obviously, I mean, we had a dozen inches, and I think we can say that the entire region got enough snow that there was had to be dealt with. Did MoDOT do a better job than IDOT, just from your general observation of the cameras? Or did IDOT do a better job than MoDOT?
I would say IDOT did a better job. Now, again, you know, the precipitation was mixed. We were sort of on the borderline. You know, North right. got more snow. We were sort of a mix. South, it was ice. Now, did Metro East get just mostly snow? I don't know what the precipitation was. I didn't watch the weather reports that closely. But I can tell you, you can see on the road sensors when the roads are slow. I mean, it's obviously there's a reason why. If it's heavy rain, if it's snow, that's great. You know, you have to slow your speed. The Illinois interstates almost every day. Now, today's a little bit of an exception because this is just a snow event for everybody. But the other days when I was seeing backups and slowdowns on the Missouri side, Illinois interstates were green, and that means they're speed limit traffic. So, you know, did they get the same amount of ice over on the Illinois side that we did over here? I don't know. But if they did, yeah, they did a better job in clearing them because their highways never ever had issues at all.
When you hear the bumper that says the trusted voice of St. Louis, it's because of people like Captain Roger Brand. Roger, thanks for what you're doing. I know you're going to have traffic here for us in the news. Get us home. Keep us safe. Captain Roger Brand, kind enough to join us on the Hancock and Kelly Show. Here comes the news. That's right. Football. We are joined now by our NFL insider at the Hancock and Kelly Show. His name is John Hancock Jr. He's the more reasonable of the two Hancocks I deal with because mainly I don't talk politics with you. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Michael, I'm doing well. How are you?
Fine. Well, listen, I watched the Lord's team win last night on a field goal at the very end. Notre Dame defeating Penn State, setting up their opportunity to go to the national championship against what I think is going to be probably the best game of the series tonight, Ohio State and Texas. How you see that game coming down, and what'd you think of our good old Fighting Irish last night?
Yeah, so last night was a phenomenal game to watch. I mean, it came down to a last-second field goal, and I was rooting for Notre Dame. They are a fun team to watch. They lost to Northern Illinois in week two, and a lot of people wrote them off, but they had some resiliency, and they really worked together well as a unit. Marcus Freeman did a great job, and it's always great when Penn State loses. And we do have Texas, Ohio State. Tonight should be a good one. I think Ohio State is the best team in terms of talent and when they play to their potential. But in the Ryan Day era, their head coach, seems that they're not always humming at 100% in some of the biggest moments. So I actually like Texas and Quinn Ewers, their quarterback, to win a close one, setting up the Texas-Notre Dame championship. Two storied franchises.
Well,
where neither has won in quite some time.
Yeah, and that game's going on at Jerry World down in Dallas. So you have to believe that there's going to be a sizable contingent for Texas that could be helpful. As a Notre Dame fan, I'm worried about Ohio State. I think if it's Ohio State-Notre Dame, Ohio State's the best team. I think Texas might be able to beat Ohio State in that environment.
Yep, I agree with you completely there. They got the Jerry World home field boost. And I'm rooting for the Fighting Irish here on out.
Attaboy. Well, hey, listen, this from my standpoint is the best week of football ahead of us because we've got NFL games. Of course, we've got the amateur gladiators playing this evening, but we have the NFL games starting tomorrow, wild card week. Let's go through these games, John Jr. Let's talk through what you see happening. The L.A. Chargers, I guess we can call them that, and the Houston Texans are going to fight it out Saturday afternoon in Texas and Houston. Who you got there?
Yeah, so this is an interesting game. We have Justin Herbert with the Chargers in his fifth year, still has not won a playoff game. But Jim Harbaugh in his first year as the coach has that team looking sharp. Chargers favored by 3, and I think they get the win here. The Texans benefited from a very weak division, the AFC South, and C.J. Stroud regressed pretty strongly in his second year. I like the Chargers in this game.
Okay, then we move to the second game then tomorrow, which is the Steelers, my favorite coach in the NFL, Mike Tomlinson, taking on the other Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens appear to be too much for the Steelers, especially at home, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I like Mike Tomlin a lot, too, but it seems like the past few years he's kind of paying the price. He's overperforming with these teams, getting them to the playoffs, but they just don't have the quarterback play that you need to really succeed in the current state of the NFL. The Ravens are heavy favorites here. Lamar Jackson coming off of arguably his greatest regular season as quarterback. He's got a lot to prove. He's a guy who tends to shrink in the biggest moments. A lot on his shoulders in terms of his legacy, and can he rise to the occasion this year? But I like the Ravens in this game. I'm going chalk.
Then we go to Sunday. Denver Broncos make it back to the playoffs, but they're taking on Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. Josh Allen, arguably the best player in the NFL.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the odds-on favorite for MVP this year. The Bills 9 points favorite against Sean Payton and Bo Nix. Bo Nix has had a surprising rookie year. I think a lot of people weren't expecting much from him, but he put together a very, very strong year. I think this could be a potential upset. I'm putting the Bills on upset alert.
Wow.
I think they likely win this game, but if any of these heavy favorites are going to go down, I think it could be shocking with the Buffalo Bills. And Sean Payton, surprisingly, against bald coaches, has a phenomenal record. Sean McDermott is a bald guy over there on the Buffalo sidelines.
Impressive. Get on the money line on that game. That's going to pay well. The Packers and the Eagles fight it out in Philadelphia. Both teams, that weather really shouldn't matter.
Yeah. I think Philadelphia rolls here. They have a strong team. They've been firing on all cylinders. Jalen Hurts is getting healthy. I know the Packers, they're good, but they're young. I think the Eagles take care of this handedly.
Okay, our NFL insider and I have in the past agreed on the fact that Baker Mayfield may have been a little bit, of a fraud. That's changed from my perspective since he's been now in Tampa. He's got the Washington Commanders, who are finally back towards the playoffs, and they're hosting them down there in Tampa Bay. What say you on Baker Mayfield's ability to win this wild card week?
Yeah, so regular listeners of Hancock and Kelly will know that I removed the fraud label from Baker Mayfield entering this season. He was humbled in a big way, and he's, you know, showed some resiliency to be more than a serviceable quarterback in the NFL. I did say the new biggest fraud is Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars. and Michael, as I often am, I've been proven right on that one. But yeah, this is a game where both teams, I think it's a win-win no matter the outcome. No one expected either of these teams to be here. Jaden Daniels is in his rookie year with Washington. Baker and the Buccaneers having a surprising 10-7 season. I think the Buccaneers take this, but I wouldn't be shocked if this one goes either way.
Yeah, and I'm kind of rooting for Washington simply because I've had experience in that city. People, as crazy as we are about St. Louis Cardinals baseball, and baseball is how driven Washington people are for their team. So I'm rooting for D.C., believe it or not. Who roots for D.C. these days? And then probably the game of the week, Monday night, the Minnesota Vikings take on the L.A. Rams out at that a stadium that Stan Kroenke could afford to build out in L.A. but couldn't do it here in St. Louis. Kroenke go down in flames?
Yeah, so actually, because of the flames there, they've moved this game to Arizona.
Oh, I did not know that.
In Los Angeles, yeah. So, I mean, it's not going to have that big of an impact. There aren't many Rams fans in Los Angeles. There aren't many Rams fans anywhere. but unfortunately, I do think the Rams pull this one out against the Vikings. They've been a phenomenal story, but we saw some cracks. Sam Darnold reverting to his New York Jet form looked like he was seeing ghosts out there. Against the Lions in the last game of the season. And Sean McVay, Matt Stafford, they've ended the season on a 9-3 run after a weak start, and they are one of the very few coach-quarterback combos who have won it all in the league and in the playoffs today.
We are the voice of Kansas City Chiefs. We've just got about 20 seconds left. They have the week off. That's got to be helpful with a potentially hurt Patrick Mahomes. How do you see the rest of the Chiefs playoff run playing out?
Yeah, so it's no secret I'm not a Chiefs fan. I've rooted against them heavily in the past, but you know, I call it like I see it. The Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. I'm trying to find a way. It's not the case, but they're going to win. If you can get them to win the Super Bowl, I think you take it. It feels inevitable. They just find a way with Andy Reid.
He is John Hancock Jr. He is our NFL insider and kind enough to work with me today when his dad's ducking. John, have a good weekend. Enjoy the football. And for all of you who listen to Hancock and Kelly today, thank you so much. Sunday, it'll be Hancock and Kelly, the television show on Fox 2 with Andy Banker. You can tune in to see us there at 8:30 in the morning. I'm Michael Kelly. I'm going to stick around with Amy and Chris right now. Have a good day, everybody. Stay safe from the snow.